All right, welcome back to Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty Nefaro, only seen here out of Indie Music. Well, I'm saying Indie Music TV, but we're not in Indie Music, we're Tin Mirror. So we've got an honored guest, Chuck Palumbo. Thank you for coming from beautiful San Diego.
No, thank you for having me. My pleasure. My pleasure.
Where we were, you know, if anyone doesn't know, Chuck is, he lives in San Diego. Which is if anyone's ever been to San Diego, everybody watching out there, it is an incredible place to live.
It is.
So not only is this guy good looking, all right? He's got a hot girlfriend. He lives in San Diego, and meanwhile we're like comparing lives, and I'm about to jump off the Tin Mirror roof. But anyway, we're in Tin Mirror. So again, thank you for joining us today. We had a long rough weekend. You're here for the big event.
I am tomorrow. Yeah, I'm excited about it.
So we were talking about how often do you come out to meet the fans?
I really don't, to tell you the truth. We were talking off air about it a minute ago. This was an opportunity to come back home and see my family up in the Rhode Island area, and then see the fans down here. So I said, let me jump on it, come do it. But I really never ever do appearances.
That's
not. I love the fans.
Right.
I just, with what's going on in my life, I just really don't have the time really to go to do them.
And in many cases, especially in the pro wrestling field, you know, people stay in pro wrestling. You branched off and
I did.
Just started a whole secondary life for yourself. So San Diego, good looking guy, plenty of money from wrestling, plenty of money afterwards. God, if I die, I want to be Chuck Palumbo.
I'm not going to be able to walk out this door. My head's going to swell up. But thank you for the kind words.
No, man. Well deserved. Holy cow.
Thank you.
So that secondary career, though, like where did that come from?
After wrestling?
Yeah.
So actually, you know, believe it or not, I was doing all that stuff for the most part at some level before wrestling. Growing up, I wanted to buy a car when I was 16. Or have it ready when I was 16. So when I was 15, I had saved up some money from working in shops and doing carpentry. And I bought a car, and my neighbor owned a body shop. And he gave me a space to work on the car. And I traded by sweeping floors and learning how to do work. And I eventually learned the trade of auto body. Later on, I ended up becoming an auto body painter at a Mercedes-Benz dealership in Rhode Island. Mm. But
There's crazy money in that too, right? Not to make it all about money. I'm sure it's a passion of yours too, right?
Yeah, so I'm not in the repair business or the auto body business. I do more like custom cars, restorations, motorcycle builds, stuff like that.
Wow.
But I mean, all this stuff at a small level I was doing prior to being a wrestler. I was an aviation mechanic in the Navy for 4 years, 92 to 96. Then I went to college after that, played basketball in college on a scholarship. I got the scholarship while I was in the Navy. It was kind of, I did everything kind of backwards. I was kind of just trying to navigate my way through life. And then the wrestling thing was a whim. I saw an ad on television for the WCW power plant. Yeah. I didn't know anything about it.
All right, so appease me a little bit. I want to cover a news article with you, and I want you to weigh in and tell me what you think. UFC Hall of Famer Mark Coleman. You know Mark Coleman at all?
I don't know him personally, but I know of him. I remember when he was a big deal with those guys.
So we've had him in studio.
Sure.
A really great guy. But recently, Mark Coleman saved his parents from a fire, and he was actually in a coma for a while.
Was he?
Yeah, and this is recent. And when he woke up, he said he was the happiest man in the world. I mean, he lost his dog. And, you know, we know how that is a big deal. But here's a guy who, you know, saved his parents.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up is, not only do you live in San Diego, good-looking guy, all these careers, you save people's lives too, right?
I know what you're talking about.
What?
About the car?
That car story? So what happens there?
I live in a rural area, East County, San Diego, like in a mountain area. And I was driving down the road in the morning. I don't know where I was going, maybe to pick up some material or something. I was in my truck. And then there's like a bad bend, like a blind curve bad bend. On a spot in this road, and there was a car on its side, and the police hadn't arrived yet. No one was stopping.
So, shocker. Shocker.
So, yeah, so let me stop and try to help these people. So it was on its side. I had to get the passenger door open. And when a car is on its side, you don't think about it, but to open the passenger door, right, it's like heavy, you know, because it's on its side, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, there was a girl in there, and I dragged her out, but her arm was stuck under the car on the driver's side. So if I remember correctly, because people liked asking me, because I heard this before, and people were asking, so Chuck, I heard you lifted up a car. I said, I lifted it up enough to get her arm out that was stuck underneath it. I didn't like pick the car up. I just like kind of leaned it over to get her arm out. And then I was able to get her out. But she wasn't really hurt for the most part.
Was she grateful?
She was grateful. But you know what's funny? She was a younger girl. I'm trying to pull her out, and she's not working with me, and she wants to get her phone that's on the floor, well, the inside door of the car. She wants to, I'm like, don't worry about your phone.
Right.
We'll get that later.
Yeah.
But she insisted on her phone, so I was patient with her. But anyway, got her out, and then I kind of got out of there quick because I didn't want to draw attention to myself or, you know.
Does she... I mean, again, you know, the old story, when you save someone's life, they like slave for you for life. Did she ever reach out to you, thank you for that day?
We didn't exchange information. So I never saw her again.
So you were just this hero that came up.
I'm not even sure how people found out about it, to tell you the truth.
Well, they find out about everything. Yeah. And they should find out about it.
But I mean, I don't know.
You know, it's no small feat. But think about what you said. Cars got, no one cared, right? They just kept driving by. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, so we'll get into your life a little bit, but clearly your parents must have done something right to create a human being like this, right? It seems like your moral compass is more than perfect.
Well, you gotta help people, right?
Yeah.
We gotta help people. I know the world's a little different now, but the way I was raised, yeah. Help each other out.
Well, tell me about your mom and dad a little bit. Like what was it like growing up in your house that you have these type of morals? I think it's important for people to hear.
You know, it's funny. I think my morals originally, my grandmother, my Nana Palumbo, her parents were from Italy. She was born and raised in Rhode Island. Grew up on a farm. She was a farm girl. She instilled kindness, hard work, dedication, loyalty, family, all those things into all of us. I have a lot of cousins. I love them all. I think she kind of was the leader in that, made the headway. And then that kind of trickled down, right? So, my mom and dad, my father, blue collar, he was a carpenter, retired now, Vietnam vet.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. They got divorced when I was 7. So from that point on, my life got pretty dysfunctional. But the early years, you know, when you're really young, when you're, you know, you're a sponge, right? Was raised right.
So you're a vet, Navy man.
Yeah.
Again, thank you for your service.
Oh, no, you're welcome. Please, thank you.
Did your father? So, again, we're both military guys, and I'm
Army.
I love this country.
Army, correct?
I'm Army. Yes.
Yeah, thank you for your service.
I love this country, but I always think about the non-vets as being the mistreated ones. Did your father ever share any stories about you? You know, like what went on in Nam, and did he have any issues after Nam?
You know, it's funny. When I was younger, no. But I'll tell you a little story. I actually used to snoop around the house when I was a kid, right? Go through my dad's stuff, you know, memorabilia and stuff from the military. And I saw some pictures, and the pictures of the destruction and the gruesomeness and what was, you know, what was Vietnam. My dad was, you know, obviously 19 when he got drafted. But, and those, you know, they took pictures of things.
Yeah.
And not like today with the cell phones and stuff, but some of the stuff I saw, after I saw it, I didn't want to ask my dad, and that's why I figured he didn't speak about it.
Right.
You know, it wasn't until later on, actually maybe just a few years ago, where he really started to open up about it. He spends a lot of time working with veterans now as a volunteer, the DAV, things like that. So now he talks about it a bit, and he's a little more proud about it. But honestly, When those guys are coming back from Vietnam, from what he told me, and this was not until recently, maybe the last 10 years, they really didn't get the support that they deserved, like our veterans are starting to get now, you know, the veterans, especially veterans coming back from war, right? He's very proud of what he, you know,
but I mean, yeah. you clearly said it, right? The guys who came back from Nam were mistreated and
yeah.
and they were looked down upon. And why do you think this country is so slow in taking care of its veterans?
That's a good question. I think now they're getting better. I really do. I think we're seeing now with social media, with the internet, I think we're starting to see the veterans get that, you know, that acknowledgement. It's slow, but I think it's happening. Why it's taken so long? I think a lot of times, and I don't know if it's our country's fault as far as the people in our country, citizens day to day, who are just living their lives, but they're not aware of what these guys are doing and why the people who live in this country have the freedom they do. I don't think they're aware sometimes. They don't think on a regular basis, you know, how are we free in this country, the most free country in the world, right? Mm. We got kids, a lot of times, 18 and up, 17 and up, fighting overseas, you know. I just think there was a lack of awareness for whatever reason. I think that's changing now.
Well, let's go a little bit deeper, right? Sure, I'll put you on the spot a little bit. And I told you, it's not just a wrestling show, right? We wanna know what our heroes, like yourself, think. But they think about what's going on in the world, right? I mean, we understand it's wrestling, but again, you know the influence that and probably the lives you've changed doing that portion of that career. But this country, for example, we just talked about the veterans that take care of it, and then we have the mass introduction of illegal immigration here.
Sure.
What are your thought processes, being a vet and being an American, that we're allowing this mass immigration in here, but we don't take care of our own?
Yeah, I think that's a problem, definitely. I think that's a big problem. I think we should definitely look at our own first, but for some reason, we don't always do that. Not all of us do that. The mass immigration, it's a problem.
It's probably a little worse on your side, right? The West Coast is
absolutely.
You're getting flooded, right?
You're getting flooded, especially with the illegals coming in from, you know, the hills from Mexico into San Diego County. And here's the thing. At some point, we're all immigrants to this country, right?
Sure.
Just come in the right way. Just come in the right, come in legally, come in the right way, and take the United States for what it is. It's a place of opportunity, and don't pillage. You know, I feel like when our ancestors came in, I know when my great grandparents came in from Italy, it was a place of opportunity. The opportunity they didn't get from what they call the old country, Italy.
Right.
So I think if we looked at it more like that, maybe things would be different. But a lot of times now, people come in with their hands out, and they want to take before they give. And I think that's a big problem.
Mm. Well done, sir. What makes you join the military?
A bit of desperation, honestly. Opportunity, but I was desperate at the time. I was sleeping on friends' sofas, sleeping in my truck, honestly.
That was it too. Same thing. Yeah, I lost my way. Yeah, I dropped out of a couple of colleges. I'm like, I got to do something, right?
Yeah, so that's pretty much the way it was. Out of high school, I was playing basketball in high school, and I was getting scholarship offers, but my head wasn't on right, and I didn't have the GPA to go to I wanted to go to a D1 school. I didn't have the GPA for it. I didn't have the discipline. I attempted it. I didn't have the discipline to go to a JC where I could, you know, stay in my hometown and go to class every day. That wasn't going to happen. I tried it for a few months. I didn't even make it to the basketball season. So, yeah, I was hungry. I mean, I was day to day. There was times, and me and my friends joke about this now, but I had about enough money, no BS, to go to 7-Eleven a couple times a week, buy cigarettes. I used to smoke Marlboros when I was a kid, and it would suppress my appetite. I would drink like big gulps.
Yeah.
And the guy would let me refill them. He knew the position I was in, and I'd smoke cigarettes and that, so I wasn't hungry. And I did that for a long time. And then finally, I got tired, man. I got tired, and in 92, my brother had just joined before me. And, I mean, you know, like I said, I was working and stuff like that, but, you know, $5 an hour, $6 an hour.
But so, when you join the Navy, right, are you concerned about your discipline there, or you were ready to go with this? Or did you feel like you had to do it now? You're in, you signed a deal, you got no choice.
Well, my brother had signed up a few months before me. He told me kind of how it worked. I knew in my heart I was a hard worker and can be disciplined. My issue was my role models at the time. I didn't have the guidance. You know, I was searching for that. So I figured when I get in there, let me take advantage of it. I really did. The GI Bill was available. I got that. Do you remember the GI Bill? How that worked?
Yeah, sure. I didn't get mine, but that's okay. Right. Got screwed out of that too.
I'm sorry. I took advantage of mine.
Of course. Why not? But, yeah. Let's just pile on, Chuck.
But no. But yeah, it was desperation at first, and then it turned into looking at opportunity.
Yeah. So you go to school.
So after the military,
why do you get out of the military? What makes you say, okay, I'm done?
Because I felt like I was an independent thinker, and I'm not knocking the military. I think it's a super foundation for all of us. Mm-hmm. And you know, honestly, if I were in this country, I mean, maybe I'd make it a requirement. You got to do 1 year.
Sure.
1 year. See what it's like. Mm-hmm. See what it's all about, and then go on your way.
Right.
I think in some countries they actually make young men coming up, maybe Israel, places like that. I think they make them do maybe 2 years.
Sure.
Anyway, while I'm in the Navy, I was an aviation structural mechanic. I worked on the F-A-18. I worked on the E-2C Hawkeye. And then I also worked on the flight deck of the USS Carl Vinson. I would do Westpacs over in overseas, you know, in the Gulf.
Right.
Did Operation Southern Watch in 94. But anyway, the Navy motivated me. So I'm in the Navy. I don't want to sound like a recruiting commercial, but I'm thinking to myself, wow, I should have went to school. Maybe I could have became an officer. Who knows what I could have done. But the Navy just motivated me. So I wanted to go back to college. And I wanted to play basketball because I knew I had talent playing basketball. I was wasting it. Mm. I started playing basketball in the Navy when I wasn't out at sea on the local base team at Miramar, San Diego, California. And we would travel up and down the West Coast, and we'd play against colleges and stuff like that, other Navy bases, Marines.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a scholarship offer. But like I had said earlier, my GPA wasn't there yet. So when I finished up with the Navy, I went back to Rhode Island, to Community College of Rhode Island. Wonderful coach, Vin Cullen. Played there for a year, got my GPA up. And then I ended up taking a four-year scholarship, Central Missouri State. And I majored in criminal justice. That's kind of how that went.
So here you are, Navy man, turned your life around, graduate. What goes through your mind? I think I'm going to be a professional wrestler. Like, how does that even happen? Like,
it's no disrespect to the wrestling business. There's some wonderful people in the business. I've met some wonderful people, but I didn't know anything about it. I knew who Hulk Hogan was, maybe Macho Man because of the Slim Jim commercial.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I remember maybe it used to come on Saturday mornings or something like that. Never watched it. Didn't know anything about it, but they ran an ad. Ted Turner's WCW, they ran an ad on television for the power plant, and I just happened to catch an ad on television. And I knew, coming out of college, playing basketball, I wasn't going to play in the NBA. I'm 6'5", and I was a forward. I wasn't going to play in the NBA.
Okay, just stop you there. One question, though, I have, right? So you're basketball, right? Obviously in shape, but you're lean.
Yeah.
You're a big dude. You are a big dude, right? Yeah. I mean, did you enhance at all at some point before you attempt to become a wrestler?
No. I played basketball at 250 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, everybody's, how come you're not playing football? I played basketball at 250.
So no gas at all?
No.
Incredible, man. No. All right, so continue. I'm sorry. I was trying to envision you as this lean basketball player calling, you know, Buddy Lee Parker. Hey, I want to be the part of the power plant.
So I saw the ad on television, and I called. And Jody Hamilton, the original assassin,
yes. Mm-hmm.
He answered. I spoke with Jody.
Really?
Yeah, and he said, oh, you want to be a wrestler? He goes, are you an athlete? I said, yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm playing, I play basketball in college. He said, well, we'll send you the forms, get yourself a physical, and then come on down. It's $250 or $300 for the tryout.
Sight unseen, just get a physical, come on down. You got to pay. If you suck, we're just going to keep your money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And come to find out, I was naive, you know. The ad on television said, come down. If you make it through the tryout, there's a chance you'll be invited back, and you'll get a six-figure contract. 25 years old, I see the six-figure contract,
mm-hmm.
and I believe it.
Sure.
So that became my new goal. That became my new focus. I had a one-year-old baby at the time. Packed up and drove across country in an 83 K5 Blazer with a U-Haul attached to the back of it. Yeah.
And are you in your mind, I'm positive I can lick this wrestling thing. They're going to want me with no problem at all.
For some reason, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit when you get down there, like how's that introduction? And like, all right, kid, get in the ring, or will they show you anything? Like, how does it work?
So it was a weeding out process. They didn't teach us the first 3 days. Well, the tryout was 3 days, and it was just a weeding out process. They just basically ran you through drills, squats, hit running the ropes, just beat you up,
right?
Push-ups, flutter kicks, all that stuff, just gassed you out until you quit. Like day one, half the guys are gone day one, and you could speak with other guys who've been through the power plant. Guys who, like myself, who came off the street, I'm not speaking of guys like Goldberg who had their hand held coming in. It's not a knock. He's a great guy.
Right.
But he was brought in by someone. He knew people. Do you know? They trained him to put him on
the
team.
Well, they already had tagged him like, this guy's got the look. This guy's it, right?
Long
so
before.
We're gonna make sure it happens.
Yeah. That's, again, not a knock. Great guy. I'm just saying these were guys that came off the street and tried out. So the first day, half of them are gone. Second day, a few more are probably already gone in the morning because they don't come back from the first day. Honest to God.
Wow.
And then injuries. Guys fall out with injuries. By day three, it was me and one guy, and I think he lasted right before lunch. And
Jeez.
then it was me.
Just you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what do they say to you then?
Jody Hamilton again. He brings me in his office at the power plant, and he says, hey, take your shirt off. And I'm like, that's weird, right? So I took my shirt off. He looked at me, like kind of sized me up, looked at me up and down, you know? And he goes, you look good, kid. He goes, if you think you can do this, come back with $3,000 and we'll train you.
Oof.
I'm like, oh, man, $3,000. I have no money. I said, okay.
So wait a minute. A little bait and switch there. Come with $300. We'll see if you're good enough. Now, hey, come back with $3,000 and we can keep. Now they know they got the bug in you. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So I went back to San Diego. I worked a couple jobs, sold off anything I had, and that's when we drove across with the Blazer.
All right, how long does that whole thing take? So you leave.
Took
I
a
gotta
whole
come
summer.
Up with, how much?
About 4 months took me.
And they're okay waiting for you for 4 months?
Well, they were trying. So come to find out, this they had a little gimmick going. These tryouts every 30 days, they were driving guys out of the place.
Right.
And taking the money.
Just take the money, yeah.
Yeah. So
Jody's pocketing it, right?
Someone is.
Yeah, right.
30 days a month. I'm sorry. Yeah, every 30 days, a tryout. So come to find out, I found out that, there was a little bit of a scam going on there. But I took advantage of it. So came back, started training. My girlfriend at the time, which is my daughter's mother, she got a job as a waitress. So I could go to the power plant from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Uh-huh. And during the week, I've told a story in the past. We had to share that one vehicle, that old Blazer. I would use it to go to the power plant on the way home. We lived on the second floor in this old apartment. She'd walk down with the baby, hand me the baby. I'd walk up with the keys. She'd go to work. I'd take care of the baby till we went to bed. And we did that Monday through Friday.
Wow.
And then on the weekends, I started working independents locally in Atlanta, in Tennessee, Arkansas, you know, places like that.
Then that helped you out getting ready, getting like trying new stuff, getting ready for this whole deal. Then
the independence was more about kind of working in front of a little crowd, yeah. And trying to learn little things, But the power plant at that point was a weeding out process. I mean, we learned how to bump and we were definitely in shape. But as far as in-ring psychology and all that stuff, I didn't start learning that until I got on the road and started working with veterans and working in front of bigger crowds. And that took years to get the psychology down, you know.
So when did they decide to bring you into WCW? Like, when does that happen?
So originally, let's call it, let's say, do you remember the show WCW Saturday Night? It was like that little show they had. Okay, Jimmy Hart was kind of booking for that show. And I'm at the power plant for about 6 or so months, 6, 7 months. I'm not getting any money yet. And maybe at the 7 month mark, they put me on a training contract. They start giving me like $800 to $1,000 a week, which was huge for me having no money.
Right.
The most money I ever made was in the military. I think as an E3,
I could tell you like $9,000, right?
Well, I think it was $1,069 a month.
Was that, yeah, but I think my first year in the Army was like $11,000.
Okay, so we're close.
We're right there.
Close, yeah.
Imagine that, $11,000.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you had room and board, but still.
Yeah.
We were broke, right?
And your meal check. When you got your money, you spent it like a day.
And then I remember there would be kids in the on the ship or guys in the barracks, and they'd let you borrow 20, and you had to give them 30 back, and all these scams. I don't remember those scams.
But again, unfair advantage. You're a good-looking guy. You probably had no problem going out there getting laid. I had to go use my money to get laid when I got paid.
Hey,
look.
Hey, it worked, right?
That's it. That's all.
What were we talking about? I just lost my train of thought.
Going into WCW.
Yeah. So, 7 month mark, get a training contract. Now I get, you know, $800 a week or $1,000 a week, and I'm feeling a little better about myself. I'll be able to support my family a little better at that point. The company, WCW, decides to send me to New Japan to get some experience.
Oh, wow.
It was really cool. I was the only guy they sent over there, I believe, at the time. So I worked over at New Japan for about a month. Don't have a contract, like a full contract yet, a real one. And while I'm over there, New Japan offers me an opportunity to stay there. And I said, well, I got to talk to the WCW guys. I'm under a training contract. And it just so happened that within the next maybe 24 hours, I believe it was Terry Taylor. And they told me they were going to bring me back, give me a contract, and I was going to start working with Lex Luger, like in an angle. So I went back. But what I wanted to mention was when I first came back from Japan, we wanted to work on this Saturday night show that Jimmy Hart had. And Paul Orndorff was running the power plant at this point. No more Jody Hamilton. They got rid of him.
Right.
And Paul knew I worked on vehicles, and he had some old vehicles, specifically an old Land Cruiser from like the late 60s. And he told me that, hey, if you help me out with my vehicles, I'll talk to Jimmy Hart and try to get you on WCW Saturday night. This is while I'm at the power plant. So next thing you know, I'm at the power plant. We're training. Paul would take me out of training. I'd be outside doing brake jobs on his vehicles in the parking lot while all the rest of the guys were inside training.
Wrestlers always working, man.
They're always working.
Always working.
Paul,
somebody.
And Paul was something else.
Don't worry, I'll tell you your training. Just go fix my car.
So he supposedly put in the good word to Jimmy. Found out later, Jimmy planned on using us anyway. But
he got free
Paul
breaks.
Got me.
Got to break it out.
He would buy me like barbecue sandwiches and feed me, give me a cigar here and there. But yeah, I did brake jobs, body work. You name
it. Wow. Orndorff. Boy, oh boy.
So that's when I first started on that WCW Saturday night. And then when I came back from Japan, right away, I pretty much started working, and they started using me, you know.
Now, I think when you first started, right, that's when Russo comes in, right, at that point.
Yeah.
What was your experience with Russo, right? Because he kind of gets, you know, hey, he changed wrestling. He's this great mind. And then if you look at the WCW side, people look at him and said that he destroyed the place. Like, what was your experience with him?
Everybody obviously has a different experience with a person, right, or a company. Honestly, for the young talent that had just come out of the power plant, and there was a good handful of us, Vince Russo was just instrumental in getting us exposure and opportunity. So, no, I have nothing but great things to say about Vince, only because he gave all of us young guys an opportunity.
So you pushed that old guard out and brought, you know, he sure had the wherewithal to say, these are the young guys who are going to build the business for
us. He sure did. And I believe if, you know, they hadn't sold the company, because, you know, people say, well, he, you know, he ran the company to the ground. No, the company was already mismanaged. There was already things happening in the company. I think he was doing.
So let me ask you this. Thing. So you're this young guy, right? And you're just, hey, look, now I'm making money. I have this great opportunity.
Yeah.
Did you lay low? And I guess the other point would be, like, you see all the old vets there, like Nash, Hall, Hogan, I think, was still there at the time.
Yep.
Are you listening to what they're saying? Are you hearing all these discussions?
Yeah. You know, I know there was some negativity. There was rumor of the place being sold. There was rumor of Eric buying it. There's rumor of other people getting together and buying it. You know, at the time, we were just happy to be there. Hey, man, we're wrestlers now. We're on TV. We're just so excited to be there. I think our biggest worry was what was going to happen if it was sold.
Guess what? Anyway. It does. Now what goes through your mind? Here I am. I finally made it. I'm popular. I'm TV every night. I'm starting to make some real cash. Yeah. Uh-oh, WWF just bought us. Yeah. Now what? Yeah. What are you thinking?
I'm wondering, you know, do I have any security? Am I going to have a job? I remember the last Nitro, Panama City. I remember Shane McMahon walking into the locker room, and that's when we really realize it's real now. It's been sold. In the gorilla position now, you had a couple guys from WWF. And I'm going, wow, this is really happening. Again, just nervous. Didn't know. And then I was ended up being very fortunate. I was one of the few guys that was brought over right away. Now, was that because we were young, still getting a push at a time from WCW? We were making great money, but we weren't making the Sting money, the Lex Luger money, Kevin Nash money, the Scott Scott Steiner money. So I get why those guys stayed home for a while and lived their contracts out, right? But for guys like myself, I was still looking to grow in the business. I was still learning. I was still very green. So I wanted to be a part of WWF now that WCW was gone. I wanted to continue to grow in the business and eventually, you know, get the most I could get out of it.
What was the culture difference, though? Here you are leaving this. Let's be, again, I'm not there. I'm not a wrestler. I'm just a fan. But you leave this culture, supposedly that's this aggressive fighting culture. No one's getting along. It's mismanaged, supposedly. And now you're going to the WWE. What was that culture shock like?
You know, it's funny because you mentioned that this culture, there was a lot of like fighting and people not getting along. To be honest with you, it really wasn't like that. It really wasn't like that. I know a lot of people have said that, but if you talk to the boys who were there at the time, we had a great time. In WCW, we had a great time, especially when the older guys started helping the younger guys towards the end, like Diamond Dallas Page, Scott Steiner in particular, Kevin Nash, guys like that. When they Lance Storm, great guy, very helpful. When those guys who had some experience under their belts, when they started working with us, helping us, even if it was just at the hotel bar giving us advice on the business, we all had fun. We had a great time, especially that last year, man. We had the, it was great. And then, you know, I had been told by people up in WWF, I knew some guys, and I had been told that, oh yeah, you know, it's better up there. No.
It was rough.
No, it was different. We came in, and it was almost like we were a threat, because you think about it. Now you're going to have almost twice the talent up in WWF. You're not going to have twice the TV time. Mm-hmm. You still only have 2 hours of television or 3 hours of television, but now you got twice the guys. Who's going to lose a spot? Who's going to gain a spot? So these things are running through those guys' heads. And unfortunately, a lot of those guys took this invasion, they took it too seriously. I think if we had worked together, it was the most real time in the business, right? We had been bought out, unheard of. Vince brought out WCW. I think it could have been taken advantage of in a better fashion.
So let's go back a little bit. You talk about the older guys like bringing you in. Like, you know, you hear about from a lot of the older wrestlers, like the younger guys, they always tried to keep down because they wanted to keep their spot, keep making their money. You know, who's going to blame them, right? But you said other people. Was there anybody in WCW that wasn't helpful to you, that was disappointing?
Like, in WCW?
Yeah. And then... your transition to WWF, who wasn't helpful right. with you?
Right. So in WCW, I remember everyone being helpful, especially if I reached out and asked for it. But for the most part, I remember, yeah, people were very helpful. I remember in particular, early on, especially when we were doing the Saturday night show, guys like Steven Regal, extremely helpful. Dave Taylor. Do you remember Dave Taylor?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great guy. Steve, great
guy. My partner didn't like him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Dave. Well, he liked him until he tried to get his autograph. I think Dave was mean to him.
Dave barked at him or something?
Yes. He was all angry about it.
Dave's a sweetheart. And so is Steven Regal. There were some guys. I remember there were guys like Malenko, little Dean Malenko, and guys, him and maybe a couple of his little cronies that were hating on us. We were young and green.
Right.
You know, help us out. We're trying our best. There was no lack of effort. We just didn't have the experience. So there was a couple of haters, but we ignored that. Got to WWF. And like I said, I think we were a threat to some people up there in the beginning. And, you know, most of the guys were Billy Gunn right away, very helpful. Taker finally came around a bit. Bradshaw, John Layfield, in the beginning.
Do you think those guys felt like you were trying to put them out of work, though?
I don't know if they felt like that, but I mean, they must have felt a bit threatened. I mean, because it's just you got a lot more guys coming in, and you still don't have the TV time is the same.
Right.
I mean, I get it, but even guys like John Layfield ended up coming around and helping us out. In the beginning, it was a bit of there was some headbutting, but it all worked out. And then from that point on, honestly, except for a couple guys. And these were guys that were probably backstage or a couple of producers. For the most part, I was treated very well by the boys, but the schedule was brutal. You know, Vince will work you to death. Working to death on house shows, everything.
Speaking of Vince, you have to be under a rock if you don't know what's going on, what's happening. What are your thoughts on the whole situation with Vince and Janelle Grant and all the now supposed of sexual misconduct that's been going on.
Yeah,
allegedly going on.
No, I get it. I don't know Janelle Grant. If something has happened, if crimes have been committed, I definitely feel for her. Do I think things have happened? Absolutely. Do I know what has happened? No. Were there rumblings of bad things, just plainly spoken, bad things happening throughout my career up there? Yeah.
I don't want you to go in depth about bad things. I'm not trying to get that deep.
Sure.
But I guess my question to you would be, obviously, relationships build, especially in the wrestling. Like we always say, your wrestling life, you have this bubble.
Sure.
It's like the real world, but like in this tight-knit bubble. And it's like, but I dare say incestuous? Am I saying that right? But anyway, because there's sex going on, does that mean sexual misconduct?
I don't know. Here's the issue. When someone, anybody now, runs a company, runs a business, and they are the gatekeepers to something, there's a power that comes along with that, right? And a lot of times that power can be abused, taken advantage of, people can be taken advantage of. And a business, and I tell people this all the time, the wrestling business naturally recruit some of the hardest working, most dedicated people who want to be in that business and will do whatever it takes. So that being said, sometimes people can be taken advantage of, unfortunately, especially when a talent starts to justify their actions because, hey, I want to be in that business. Hey, I want to make a living. Hey, I need to continue to feed my family. Once you start justifying what you're doing in that business because that's how you make a living, that's your well-being, it becomes dangerous.
It's a great answer, man. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I'll share with you, I've always been a big Vince McMahon guy.
Sure.
Because of his business.
Sure.
And what he created. I mean, I could only wish to be as talented as that man.
Sure.
So I'm somewhat defensive of him.
Yep.
But I totally agree with the fact that if you're running a company, if you decide to interact with the lower level people in that sort of way, it certainly can lead to problems. It leaves yourself open to things, probably. And it could lead to, like, forcing people to do things because they want to survive in whatever job they're doing. So, I mean.
Or maybe they're promised something, a position. Sure. Maybe they're promised a position. Maybe they're promised a push.
Yeah.
I mean, it's happened. We know it's happened. So, honestly, I don't know if Vince is guilty or not. But, you know, if he is, well, I guess.
Well, he's lost his position, right? Yeah. So if he used that power, what do you feel about the things beyond that, right? So we've already discussed that there's definitely more than a bigger chance of abuse of power.
Yeah.
How about the sex trafficking allegations?
Well, see, now when you start talking about sex trafficking, now you're actually talking about criminal law, right? And there's certain...
Which you have a degree in, by the way.
I'm sorry?
Do we have a degree in that, right?
I actually don't have a degree. I'm short of the degree, but that's what I majored in.
Yeah.
I know a little bit about it. But, so there's certain things that have to transpire in order for it to actually be considered human trafficking. So if those check the dots, then maybe. Then maybe. Like I said, I believe some things may have happened. To what extent, I don't know. But this time around, I think it all may come out. I mean, did I ever think that Vince would be, I don't want to say driven out of the company, but that Vince would be out of the company? It seems like this time he may be out for good. I don't know. But did I ever think I'd see this? I didn't think so.
Neither did I. Let's go a little further on something else. At some point when you come back, you leave the WWE, you come back.
Yeah.
I believe you were there at the same time Ashley Massaro was there. I don't know if you ever met Ashley.
I was friends with her. She's a super sweet human being.
Which I heard. And by the way, you know, I've heard that about her. She actually went to my high school. She was younger than me. But,
okay.
So Ashley claims back then or later on that she was raped in Kuwait. I guess you guys are working in Kuwait.
Okay.
And that it was military personnel that did it. And now it's coming out that the WWE covered it up because they were working with the military. So I guess my question to you is, let's speak about Ashley a little bit. And did you hear about this while you were up there? And what were your thought process, even being a former military guy?
Yeah. So I didn't hear about this. I knew nothing about this. Ashley, as a person, I thought she was a very sweet girl. I thought she was very kind. I thought she was very friendly. She wasn't one of those girls who was stuck on herself or stuck on the business. I thought she was real, true to herself for the most part. I did not hear about the incident you speak of overseas, Kuwait.
I think it was Kuwait. I might have it wrong, but I
didn't hear about that. The claim of someone from the military being involved in the rape, you're saying?
So, suppose that she was drugged and there were some guys in white coats and some things kept happening, and supposedly they were military doctors. I didn't go that deep into it.
I
just was shocked that it now reared its head again since we have these allegations against Vince. Now John Laurinaitis has come out against Vince and said, yes, he knew about this and we did cover this up.
Well, I mean, it's possible. I hope that didn't happen just for Ashley's sake. But is it possible? I mean, it's possible. Would the WWE cover up something like that because they have a working relationship with the United States military? Very possible. You know, so I don't know. Johnny Ace says it happened.
Yeah. Well, Johnny Ace is also part of this whole sexual thing too. So
Johnny,
he's running with his cheese somewhere. He's selling people out right now.
Yeah, and Johnny Ace. I mean, listen, I'm not going to beat around the bush. He's not a great person. He's not a good person, unfortunately. So
was that your own personal experience, or just things people would tell you, or things you saw?
Yeah, my experience, the things I saw. Yeah, a little of both. Sure.
So here you are, again, very tough question, but here you are in this industry, right? You're trying to build yourself. You've got this opportunity to make all this money, trying to take care of your family. All this is with you, right? Yeah. And I get that.
Yeah.
But now you see these injustices possibly going on, or some things that, because, listen, I've known you literally 28 minutes or 30 minutes, right? And I could already tell what type of person you are. With this moral fiber you have, is there a point where you're just like, I'm going to say something and I'm out of here because I'm not dealing with this shit? Or is it like, you know what? I got to think about me. I got to think about my daughter. I have to think about my wife. Right? Yeah. What was going through your head when you would see things?
A little bit of both. You know, it's funny. At one point, I had a relationship with Stephanie. You know, we're friendly, Stephanie McMahon. And at one point, I remember one day we were talking in the hallway, maybe backstage somewhere. And she said, "Hey, Chuck, you know something? My dad says that you're too nice for this business, too good for this business. Like, you know, as far as my character goes." And that stayed with me. I don't even know if I commented on it when she said it. I might have just, you know, shrugged my shoulders or something like that. But I thought about that. And for someone that you're working for, a business that you want to be such a part of, for the person who runs the business to say that maybe you're too nice for this business, or, you know, or what have you. I started to think a little bit, you know. That stayed, and I still think about that at times, you know, at times. And yeah, you know, honestly, I have nothing bad to say about the wrestling business because it was a great opportunity. I had a great time and I met some great people. But it's a rough business, and there's some crap going on in the business that it's not ran right, you know. It's just not ran right, and it's there's some unethical stuff going on.
It's a circus.
Yeah, and it's cutthroat, unfortunately. It might be different now. But people have been taken advantage of and mistreated, you know. And I'm not talking about these accusations or allegations with Vince. I'm just talking about, generally speaking, as an independent contractor or an employee, people have been taken advantage of and mistreated.
You mentioned Stephanie, though. Would you say that Vince is a ruthless businessman? And would you think, through your relationship with Stephanie, was she different, or was she just as ruthless, if not worse?
I think Vince was ruthless. I never had a problem with Vince, honestly, to tell you the truth. But I saw how he did things. I think he was ruthless, probably, for the most part. Stephanie, I believe she was a sharp businesswoman. I think she had more of a heart. I think I always saw Steph as having more of a heart. But again, she's working for her dad. So I think at some point her hands are tied. Mm. She has to kind of go with where, you know, her dad's leading with. But I think Stephanie had more of a heart. That's just my gut feeling.
How did you see Vince and Shane's relationship when they were both working together?
Vince, Shane, another very intelligent human being, sharp, smart. I think he has good business instincts also. As cutthroat as is that, again, I don't think so. I think he had more of a heart. But again, I think he was under his dad's umbrella there. You know, he's working for his dad. I think at some point, and I don't know facts on this, but I'm just
giving your opinion.
My opinion, at some point, I think Shane said, "No, I'm not going to be a part of this, or I'm not going to do this." You know, Shane, you know, had a couple of kids of his own. I think Shane may have disagreed with the way his dad was doing business.
We had Maven in here, and Maven made the statement that he felt Triple H was the son that Vince wanted, and he, right, instead of Shane, that was what he wanted his son to be.
Sure.
You agree with that?
It's funny that he said that, but it makes sense, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think Hunter, Paul, was was more like Vince than Shane was, for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I don't want to stay on the negative, right? But it's like your opinions, and I think it really holds a lot of weight. You also were around Benoit, right? In WCW, WWE.
Yeah.
When Benoit murdered his family, and again, I will not cut it any which way. I don't want to hear any bullshit stories that this happened, whatever. He murdered his wife and he murdered his child.
Exactly.
Did you see that Chris Benoit in any interactions with him, or was it the total shock, like, that dude was the nicest guy in the world?
No, it's funny. If any of the boys, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to call it the boys, but I think all of the boys, a lot of guys don't want to bury him. Chris had a crazy side. Chris wasn't all there all the time. Yes. Was he very kind to everybody for the most part? Yes. Was he a very hard worker? Yes. Would he ask you to do anything that he wouldn't do? No. When he was in good spirits, was he nice to his, did he love his family? Was he kind to his family? Did he love his children? From what we saw, yes. But Chris had a crazy side. I'm sorry. I've seen it. I saw the way he hazed some guys. I saw the way he would snap once in a while. I saw how he acted when he drank. When him and Eddie used to, I loved Eddie. He was one of my friends. When him and Eddie would hang out and drink, Chris would get wacky. I've seen him in hotel bars. I've driven with Chris. I've seen Chris taking pills while he's drinking. I've seen Chris do a 180, like a Jekyll and Hyde move, when he was drinking and taking Xanax or whatever he was taking. So I remember times in the car, I drove with Chris and Chavo Guerrero towards the end, and I remember at times driving, and Chris would be eating Xanax while he's drinking on the road. And I also believe, sorry, but anabolics, I think he was probably he was a little guy. He was jacked. Mm. He's a little guy. I believe that, may have played a role too. Not using them, abusing them. Not taking maybe a moderate dose or a doctor prescribed dose, but abusing high levels of anabolics, pills, and alcohol. I saw a different Chris, and I think most of the other guys did too. So when I hear about guys saying about what a great guy he was, he killed his wife and his children.
Mm. Did he scare you?
Did he scare me personally? Not really, but I did share a room with him on a few occasions, and I'll just be honest, I would wonder. I'd wake up time to time.
Like, eyes opening up, like, what's this guy doing right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would, because I thought he was a little weird at times. He was super helpful to me, and he was very helpful to me, but at times he was weird, man. He was, aggro, and he'd act violent at times, and I know these other guys saw this stuff. And he hazed a lot of these young guys coming in. He had guys dressing out in the hallway, and he had guys doing Hindu squats before their matches. And so
would it be fair to me to say to you, Chuck, that Chris Benoit was just a mean-spirited human being?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I want to say that, because I don't know if he was all the time. There were times when he was. There were times when he was. But there was some from the get-go, long before that incident took place, he wasn't right. And if anybody says different, they either never saw what he had, the way he would act time to time, or they're just not saying anything.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I have a child. We love our children, right?
Yeah.
To kill your wife and children the way he did, supposedly?
Mm.
I'm sorry. And I get it. The CTE and that stuff can maybe play a role. But honestly, in this scenario, I think it was drugs and alcohol.
So here's the real question. When you hear this happened, was Chuck Palumbo surprised?
No. No. Was I shocked at the moment to hear it? Yeah, it's shocking to hear that. We were on the road.
Yeah.
Vince, announced it. He had asked us earlier that day, Chavo and myself, he had asked us if we had, you know, spoken to Chris. He knew we had been traveling together. And Vince said, hey, I'm going to send the sheriffs over in Atlanta. You know, I'm going to send the sheriffs over to his house and see what's going on. And then not too long later, Vince came out to the ring. We're all hanging around the ring. The daytime before doors opened, some of us were sitting in the stands listening to the music, whatever. And he made the announcement. We thought, because at that, the way he mentioned it, we thought that maybe someone killed him.
Right.
But when the truth came out, was I surprised? No.
What was the speech to the... So I imagine the first speech is like, Chris has passed away, we're going to do this tribute to him, you know, it's under investigation, and everybody thinks he's murdered. Yeah. Then you find out pretty quickly that he murdered his wife and child.
Yeah.
What was Vince's speech to the team that second time?
I don't remember him giving a speech. Once the truth came out, I don't remember him addressing us in like a speech. No.
Did he say, never mention this guy's name around here again?
No, not to me anyway. I didn't hear that. And some of the other boys might remember something I didn't remember as far as like the speech and stuff like that. I do know the first speech he gave us was just him coming out to the arena area where the ring is and telling us, hey, well, you know what happened. Chris passed away. Again, the way it was said, we thought Chris was maybe murdered or something like that.
Right. So my partner was here because he didn't make the flight, but he's like, man, we got to ask Chuck, and definitely got to ask you. One of the great angles of all time, you and Billy, right?
Yeah.
Who brings that up to you guys? Like, because that, you know, at that point, that's a pretty...
Sure.
Bolster's move, I think, right?
Yeah. I don't know who started it. I heard there was a writer involved in it. I heard it was partly Vince, partly a young writer that was there at the time. But the first person who told me about it was Sergeant Slaughter, I believe, because he had just come out of the meeting that day, the meetings they have at TV before we start our business that night.
What does he say to you? Come here, soldier. You're going to be gay.
He's a sweetheart. He's a sweetheart, by the way. Sarge is such a nice guy.
Yeah,
such a nice guy. But he said, "Yeah, you guys are gonna be these outlandish characters, and you're gonna have a platinum blonde hair or something like that." And then soon, right after that, we saw Vince, and I saw Paul of Hunter, Triple H. I saw Triple H, and I saw Vince. Triple H said something about it. Oh, you know, you're gonna have to bleach your hair or something like that. And then Vince kind of gave us the rundown. You're gonna have platinum blonde hair. You're gonna wear robes. We didn't really know what we were doing yet at that point. They were supposed to be these outlandish, edgy characters.
So they're not really revealing what they want, so they're kind of like just getting you ready, warming you up.
Yeah, exactly.
Fluffing you, if you can imagine.
For lack of a better term. And, you know, at the time, I mean, again, we just wanted to work. We wanted to be on TV and work, so we were down for whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did we know it was going to become what it became? No. Did we realize we were going to have as much fun as we did? No, we had a lot of fun.
How many people viewed that wedding?
I don't know.
It was like a record, right, at some point?
Well, I think they hit the mark they wanted to hit, which was to be the number one rated show, cable television network week, maybe. I think they were rated number one that night out of all the shows that aired that night.
Yeah, absolutely.
Around the world.
That was
so
huge.
That was big. So it worked. Now, don't get me wrong, there's other people that played big parts in that. You had Rico, obviously. You had Eric did a great job as the... with your priest, whatever it was.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of people involved in it. But, you know, it's funny because those characters were, you know, initially were heel characters, and they quickly became, you know, baby faces. So, and, you know, at the end of the day, what did we it was cutting edge at the time, right? Mm-hmm. But what did we really do? Joked around a little bit?
Yeah,
some innuendos?
No.
We had fun. And everybody was having fun with it.
And it was great. It was must-see TV.
It was.
I don't even know if I was watching at the time. I remember I had to watch that. I'm like, I cannot believe this is what's going on.
Because you can't take yourself so seriously. Like, a lot of these guys, like, start living their gimmick, and they start believing that they're, I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin and stuff like that. People start believing they're these guys.
Yeah, right,
you know?
Right,
and
right.
Say, wait a minute, hold on. Time out. No, you're not. they're characters, and you play them to the best of your ability. You know?
One of my favorites, I could be wrong, but you had a relationship with Sean O'Hare, right?
I
you
did,
guys
yeah.
were friends.
Yeah.
You guys, WCW together.
Yeah.
And then you came to WWE together.
Yeah.
Tell the people out there what kind of person Sean was, and then maybe we could discuss what happened.
Yeah. So he had two sides. There was one side of Sean who was very gentle, very kind, smart, a good friend, sweet guy. There was that side of him. I'm just talking from a personality standpoint now. Obviously, great athlete, big, strong guy,
yeah,
intense guy. But there was another. He had another side, and he could be mean. Never expressed it towards me, but I had seen him out in public. We'd go to a bar once in a while in Atlanta, or Buckhead. This is when we were down there training at the power plant and stuff. And he would get into fights with guys, and he had a mean side. Unfortunately, I probably knew a girlfriend or two of his, and I had heard that from them, you know, from them too. He had been, you know, aggressive towards them and mean. Mm. So I knew he had that other side. With me, he was always kind. We had a lot of fun on the road when he was in good spirits for the most part. We had a great opportunity. So we celebrated that together. It was a great experience. I don't know what happened, to tell you the truth. I think, you know, sometimes depression's, you know, it's not talked about a lot, but it's very powerful. And a lot of times I don't think people realize that they're going through it or have it. And if you take someone like Sean, who was larger than life for a short period of time, and was on TV and, you know, had that natural high going and was, you know, was getting the attention, the exposure, and then all of a sudden that's taken away from you, I think that can play a role with your mental health. And I think that, and I'm not a doctor, and like again, I said, this is just my opinion, but I think that, and then, like I said, I think he had a dark side. I think that they both played a role in him committing suicide.
When he committed suicide, and you heard about it, can you tell me about that day? I mean,
yeah, so I heard about it from one of my other buddies. I don't even remember who. One of the guys from the power plant that hung out with all of us. And, yeah, it was sad because, you know, I hadn't spoke with him in a while. I had heard he was back down in Hilton Head, maybe, his hometown or something. I heard he was a hairdresser at the time.
Okay.
Which I thought was a little odd, but.
Yeah, that is a little odd. Like, okay.
I know he had tried to step into MMA a bit at the time and I think kickboxing, and he didn't really find much success. But that was it. I didn't really know what else was going on with him, and I didn't. Well, we were the kind of guys that we didn't have to talk every. If we didn't talk for a year and then we talked, it was like we hung out yesterday.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So we didn't have to do that. We knew we were friends, and that was it. But we weren't that close at the time of his death, and it's just unfortunate that I didn't have a chance to speak with him and maybe have an opportunity to help him if I had sensed what he was battling inside.
Is there a guilt like with when that type of thing happened? Because, like I said, you're again this closer group.
Yeah.
And is there guilt like, you know, should I have paid more attention to these guys,
right.
You know? Like, what goes in your mind there?
At that point in my life, I'd be lying if I said that. I didn't feel like there was a guilt. It was just sad.
Right.
It was just sad, and I felt bad, and I wish I could have done something. But, again, we were the kind of guys that we didn't have to talk every day. We didn't have to hang out a lot.
Right.
And when we did, it was like we were buddies. But yeah, I don't think I felt guilt, to tell you the truth. I just think I was just it was just a downer, you know? It's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Someone taking their life. Especially a young guy who definitely had a lot of, you know, a lot of talent, a lot of ability. So, you know.
Good looking guy, yeah. Famous. It's impressive that you stayed out of the muck. How did you stay out of the muck?
Yeah. Being a father. Yeah. Being a father to a little girl. So, no, don't get me wrong. Was I perfect? No. I party once in a while with guys, go out, drink beers, go to the clubs once in a while. Yeah, I mean, I was on a natural high at the time. Here's a group of guys, especially the guys from the power plant. I always refer to those guys just because they were a special time for me, and some of my best memories came from the time I spent and the challenges that all of us endured. Yeah, we were on such a natural high having fun. So, you know, I was the guy that would go out once in a while with the guys, and we hung out and we had a lot of fun. But, yeah. Having a child, you have to be, you know, when you get home, you get to turn it on. You get to be there for that little girl or little boy. And, you know, especially with females, I believe, the most important figure in a young female's life is their father, I believe. Not their mother, I believe it's the father. And females tend to attract to men who closely represent their fathers.
Mm.
And I knew that. So, yeah, that was it. Just knowing I had the responsibility of a child.
How's your relationship with your daughter now?
Oh, wonderful. I'm very fortunate. She's been an easy kid. She's 27 now. We have a great relationship. Always have. She's a great kid. She's a hard worker. I've just been lucky. You know, I've just been lucky.
I don't know if you're lucky, man. I think you just got your shit together, and you've done a great job. I want to thank you for the interview first. You're incredible.
No,
I think for the wrestling fans, we should thank you for what you gave to the business and the great moments you've given. And I want to thank you for serving this country. There's a lot of things to thank you for.
No, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
No, it's you'll be at the big event tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
You can see this hero and get your autograph and picture. Unfortunately, I have to yell at his agent because his agent booked this hotel all the way back in Queens, which makes absolutely no sense. I'm not even getting it at this point.
The traffic.
I
forgot because I don't come to New York a lot. I go up to New England. Right. I don't spend much time in New York, and the traffic was brutal. It was worse than California.
What time's he expecting to pick you up tomorrow to come back out here?
Well, he's coming to get me early. Now it all makes sense because he's coming to get me at like 8:15 a.m.
8:15? I think that could be a mistake.
What time does it start? 10?
I think it starts at 10. I got it. Well, look, I don't know. I whatever. I just could have just plopped you right here. You're good to go.
Yeah.
I'll have to text him.
That's okay. Hey, I'm glad. I don't get the opportunity to interact with fans in person often. I never do appearances. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm sure the fans are excited to see you. I know I was excited to interview you again. Thank you, sir. You are quite the gentleman.
No, please.
Thank you for
what
you've
done. You're welcome.
Thank
you.
Thank you so much. All right, man. You've been watching this special show. We'll be back on Saturday where we have Robin. I can't pronounce Andre's name. Andre the Giant's daughter and possibly Perry Saturn. So, join us Saturday. And if anybody going to a big event, you get to see Chuck Palumbo and all the great stars that made you. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't forget, you got Wrestling Remembered coming on after this. Chuck, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you soon, everybody. Love you.